Hey, everyone. So we are back with a part three with Jonathan Alderson today. Stick around and we are going to get into a meaty conversation about consequences.
When you become a mom, you never imagine your child getting an autism diagnosis. It feels like your dreams have shattered, like a framed photograph falling off your mantle, exploding into a thousand pieces. But instead of trying to glue those pieces back together, this community of moms is here to help you build a new dream, a better one. So join in the conversation as us moms talk autism.
All right, so we are back with, I'm not even going to do the long intro, Jonathan, because you're here for the third episode. You are now just friend of the podcast, Jonathan Alderson. We've been waiting for this episode since episode one, I think. We have so much to talk about and we've had such awesome conversations, but today we are going to focus on our kids and consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that has been difficult for me as a parent is I have a neurotypical child who's older, and consequences were always very natural with her. It was very easy. And I have struggled some with consequences with Gracie because I want to make sure she's fully understanding why these consequences are happening. And I think that that's a struggle for a lot of our community. How do we make sure that they're fair? How do we make sure that they're understood? Mm-hmm. How are we still providing loving, supportive parenting, but also relaying the fact that there are consequences? So give me your take on this.
Thank you. And first of all, thanks for having me back. It's great to see you again. I do feel like a friend on your show. And when you said three times, it made me think about a book I read many years ago called Three Cups of Tea. And the title came from a tradition in Afghanistan and some of the Middle East where you invite someone into your home, you have a cup of tea, and they're a stranger, and you get to know them. And then you invite them for a second time for a cup of tea, and they're a little bit closer to being a friend. And on the third cup of tea, that's when you sort of welcome them and they're a real friend. So we're sort of following that tradition.
I love that. Three. Oh my gosh. I love that.
And this is three, and there may be
four. May be four.
You
there
know,
may
four
be
four. Five, that's right.
We'll see,
six,
we'll see how this goes. but lovely to see you again. And I've been really thinking about this conversation about consequences and how important it is, I want to just say two quick things to sort of right off of what you said, Shannon. First of all, let's take parenting out of it for a second, and let's just all agree on this, that if you're alive and you're walking around the planet and you're autistic or you're not autistic or whatever sort of situation you're in, is that consequences happen naturally. And mm-hmm. and this is a very important point to sit with for a second. Consequences, when we talk about consequences in the parenting perspective, we get into talking a lot about compliance and children listening and doing what they're told. But just step away for a second from that. And as a parent, it's really, really important in the starting point is to say consequences will always happen to my child, for my child. Mm-hmm. And so the first starting point, I think a place to start actually is to talk about that if you walk outside with your socks on in a puddle and in the rain, your socks will be wet. And I'm not trying to be silly. I'm saying that if a child starts to understand that if then, when a child mm-hmm. understands when I push a chair over, it will fall and make a loud noise. If I don't study for my math exam, I could get a D minus and have to go back in the summer and repeat it. And if I don't show up for my job, if I'm 19 years old, I'm autistic, and I've been given the opportunity to work, and I decide that I'm not going to go to work, I may lose my job. And those are real consequences that as parents, we love to shelter our kids as much as we can, make it nice and a happy journey, but life happens. There are consequences. So before we move to how do I impose a consequence on my child, there's a conversation to have here around your child understanding consequence. I want to add one little important piece to this, okay? Because this is where it really the rubber hits the road. So we could have a conversation about how do I help a young child or maybe a nonverbal child, et cetera, with autism understand just that idea of consequences. If then that you do something and there's a consequent action. I think where it's really important in this discussion to be clear as a parent is to not try and make life fair, to not try and make consequences disappear for your autistic child. That's really important. So Shannon, on the one hand, a lot of parents, I do think, and I think because we love our kids, we try and make things fair. You get a toy and your brother gets a toy. Someone at school got to have a turn and your teacher didn't give it to you, so we'll give you the turn now. And we're trying to make things equal all the time. The problem is life doesn't actually happen like that. And as a parent, you can't always be there. And so the lesson that kids miss is learning that life isn't fair, but you can be resilient anyway.
I love that.
Okay, so we just stop there. And as you guys know, there's a whole movement around resiliency and how do we help our kids resilient. One of the answers is you have to not try and make life fair. And if your kid says that's not fair, a great answer could be, you're right. Life isn't fair. But the good news is we're learning how to still choose happiness, still find fun, still be optimistic, still keep being resilient and try again. And all those other great things around resiliency.
It's so good.
Just a starting point.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love that because I think without getting into the weeds too much, I struggle a lot with what's the word I'm looking for? Like entitlement. I struggle a lot with entitlement. And I think it's very common in today's age.
Younger.
And I think that it's funny because you look back to when I was a kid and I'm like, I can't tell you how many times my parents told you life's not fair.
Yeah.
Right. And it feels like the further we've gotten from me being a kid, like, people aren't saying that. What do you mean life's not fair? Well, we should make life fair. Well, life, it just is not always going to be fair, right? So yeah, I won't get into the weeds on that, but I love that lesson, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like too, just in a working harder aspect, right? I mean, if everything was fair and everything was easy, then everybody would be, you know, walking around with perfect lives and whatever, but nobody wrote a book without working really, really hard and having fails and getting up and trying again. You know, like you have, Jonathan, and typical or diverse, you know? But it is hard as a parent. I will tell you, I just have to say I'm a twin. Twins are of a different.
That's right. She different got one breed. And I want one.
We're of a different breed. And I'm not saying that my parents were bad parents, but you know, they probably
indulge that.
So it's, or yeah. And it's, I try not to do that with my kids, but it's hard, you know, it, but you're right. It's just not good. Not good.
Not well, good. It sets you up. Here's what happens is for a couple of years, maybe even 5 or 6 years, you can make things pretty fair. You're as a mom and a dad, you can do it.
Yeah.
You can buy them each a toy. You can give them each a turn. You can do a lot of things. They're in your environment. You can control a lot. So the false hope in some way that you set up in your children that life is going to continue to be fair. And if it's not, and I come home and I complain, mom makes it right. The false hope is that it's hard to do when they're 13. It's hard to do when they get out in the world and they're 14 and 15, 16, 20, that you can't, as a mom and dad, you can't control the external environment in that way, like you could when they were 1 and 2. And so two things happen. The For you, it's stressful. For a parent, you know, you can get angry, you can get stressful, you can start fighting the system. And I think it's so, so important. Let's just say this. Of course, it's important to try and make systems more fair. Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's important to fight for inclusion. Of course, it's important mm-hmm. to right. talk to your local softball association to say, my child deserves to be at bat as many times as every other kid. Of course,
yeah. right.
100%.
Right.
So, but all I'm saying is it's not possible to control all of what your child is going to run into. Therefore, the second thing that happens is if we don't teach our kids that there are unfair things and how to manage those, then they're not resilient and they're not set up for success. That's all we're saying. Mm-hmm. And this is going to tie into mm-hmm. consequences. You'll see it in a minute.
Right.
So now if we step yeah. back for a second, Shannon, to your question is, how do I help my child understand consequences and understand what's happening? Well, first of all, before you ever impose a consequence, there are unfair things that just happen. And I would say that, you know, you want to look at, am I sheltering my child from those and protecting from those? Or am I helping my child to understand that's a consequence? That's what happens. If you play really roughly with your sister, she might not want to play with you. That's how it works. I'm not going to shelter you from that. It's not a bad thing for you to learn yeah. that. I don't have to play referee around that. I'll make sure that you don't get clumps of hair pulled out of your head. That's about it. But apart from that, maybe your sister doesn't want to play with you and you got to live with that for this Saturday afternoon. What happens, Shannon, is if you're able to not shelter your child from natural consequences, it's much, much easier for you to roll out consequences for as a parent in other circumstances, just because they understand the concept of it in the first place. So that's a starting mm-hmm. point to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Just mm-hmm. a starting point.
Yeah.
If you've been, you know, let's say they come home from school and they get a low mark and you're the kind of parent that says, oh, well, your teacher doesn't know anyway, you know, kind of sort of dismiss it as opposed to putting the responsibility on the kid and saying, maybe you got to study harder. If that's what's happening, then don't be surprised when you try and impose a consequence and make something happen and they say, that's not fair. Because mm-hmm. they're kind of like, where did that come from? You've been protecting me all this time. You've been saying life is fair. You've been adjusting things, mm-hmm. making it easy. Why aren't you doing it in this case? Why aren't you cutting me some slack mm-hmm. now? So there becomes this this incongruence in some way between how you've been behaving all these years with me and now you're imposing consequences. It's just a thought, something to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to dive into how I would suggest consequences can work really well?
I would love it.
Okay. All right.
Tosh nods.
Yeah. Okay. Super duper. So we talk about in our program consequences that promote responsibility, consequences that promote self-responsibility or independence. And this is really a key thing here. So let's go. Let's jump into it. When I set up a consequence, I want to, as a parent, my goal is going to be to set up a consequence so that my child ultimately has a choice and that my child is making the choice on what they want to do. And therefore, my child is choosing to have the consequence or not. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. Hey, little buddy, it's bedtime. It's bedtime. And so I want you to go and get your pajamas on. And if you choose to go and put your pajamas on, listen to my language. If you choose to go and put your pajamas on, then we'll have time for a story. If you decide to stay here and watch TV and not turn it off and not come and get ready for bed, then there'll be two things that happen. One is there won't be time for a story, and there won't be TV tomorrow night after dinner. Mm-hmm. That's a consequence. Mm-hmm. No bedtime story. And tomorrow. Now, I'm going to go backwards and explain to you how we got to that point. But let's just pause and see what's happening here. So the language I'm using is you can choose. You could choose to watch TV for the next 5 minutes. And you know that the consequence then will be no bedtime story and no TV tomorrow after, before bed, let's say, after dinner. or you could come upstairs now. Now, when the child sits there and doesn't listen to me or makes the wrong decision, let's say, or makes the decision they make, and I come in and I turn the TV off and they go, that's no fair. Yes, you're such a meanie. You're the worst dad in the whole planet of the earth. And I say, hey, little bunny, I hear you. But you know what? You decided to keep watching the TV. So you decided to not have a book tonight. You decided that. That was your choice. You had a choice. Now, check this out. And I say, and next time, if you really like a bed, oh, but I love bedtime stories. I want to read the Disney book. Yeah. So guess what? You could tomorrow, you could choose to put on your pajamas when I ask you to, and then you can have a story. That's you can decide differently next time. That's how cool it is. See how empowering that is? I'm not the bad guy. I'm not the jailer. I'm not walking around giving citations in the house. I'm giving you options and choices, and I'm telling you the consequences right up front. You're making the decision. I don't feel bad about imposing those consequences that you knew about and I told you about and you decided about. And the good news is you have the chance to try again next time and make a different decision and have a different outcome. And I'm not going to judge you or be mad or unhappy about it. So that's it in a nutshell. We'll walk backwards and say, how do you set that up so it works? But that's kind of the outcome. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think if we're going to kind of take it back, how we get there, right? Because at this point, if I tried to have that discussion with Gracie now, it would be like, what are you even talking about? Because it's not a conversation we've had, right? So kind of how we do that. And we do have consequences in our house. But I will have to say, after hearing you say that, I don't know how much choice there is. And the like, you've chosen to do this. This is now your consequence. It's more the way it goes. So I'm sitting here with open mind and open ears on how I can make it.
Right. How you can make it
more
a bit
empowering
smoother. Yeah,
for
yeah,
her.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the last thing you said, you chose this, therefore that's a consequence. That's exactly what we do too. You chose to walk in the house with your shoes. So the consequence, you remember, is now you get to sweep the whole floor in the kitchen. So that's there. What we're going to talk about is how do I set that up well in advance and make it really clear so that it's not me imposing some hard condition that seems unfair and that I become, again, the bad guy, but you decided. So you get the consequences. And I want to keep saying this. The good news is you can make a different decision the next time and have a different outcome. That's what's empowering about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like that.
I just really quickly want to say, Jonathan, so, you know, all of our kiddos are different in their neurodivergence. So like the focus in the beginning of saying that, you know, I'm looking at Jack and he's on his bed playing with his Lego. And I'm like, Jack, you know, if we put the Legos away, same thing, like you said, we can have story time if you choose to. How do I get him to I have him repeat back to me that he has heard what I've said so that he knows that we both are on the same page, that you've heard what your options are. You've heard that there could be a consequence.
Right. How do you get there? Okay. So let's go through some basics. Yeah. These are basic steps that we take. No. That's a great question. Here's some of the answers. So there's a couple of rules that you want to follow for this to be clear. And by the way, everyone that's listening, these are totally doable. Totally, totally doable. This is like, you know, easy bake oven. You can do this stuff even with children who have different communication styles and different abilities cognitively. This is doable. We've done this with lots and lots of kids. So there's a couple of rules to follow. The first is you'll want to do consequences should be predetermined and pre-communicated. They should not be on the fly and ad hoc. So I'll say it again. Don't make up consequences when you're angry, when you're losing it. It's got to be the contract has to be written ahead of time. Okay. Just as a start, what was the movie? One of the comedy, not Home Alone, but one of the comedy movies. I often forget. But anyway, he's standing there and the kids aren't putting the Christmas tree right. They're kind of being naughty and they're not doing it right. And the father at some point says, "That's it, guys. I'm canceling Christmas forever."
No.
Right? Something like this. And sort of his wife kind of looks at him and goes, "Are you sure about that? Like, is this going to happen?" But we do that, right? We're never going to watch this TV again. That's it. You know, parents who have canceled family vacations, and of course they can't because you booked in to go to Florida. You're going to Disney. That's it. We're not going to Florida. If you guys can't be quiet, and everyone goes, "We're not going to Florida." And of course you can't do that. And so this ad hoc just coming up with sort of threats and things. If you guys don't sit down right now at dinner table, then we're not going to whatever on the weekend. So coming up with consequences in the moment when you're mad, unhappy, frustrated, whatever, is never a good idea. And it almost never works for a whole bunch of reasons. And moms and dads listening, you know where I'm at, right? We don't have to explain this more. So
that's me all the time.
That's you all the time. Okay. So try not to do that. And you can avoid doing that by doing this new system I'm going to tell you. But just in that case, if you find that you are that person, if you put up your hand like Natasha that said, I tend to do that, then find a different strategy to do instead. Because if that's your go-to, like the threat and the consequence, find something different to put in its place. Don't do that, but what can I do instead? Because I want to say something. I want to articulate something. Figure that something different out, Natasha. I don't know what it could be. It could be restating what you want. By the way, this is just a substitute. Okay. I want to have a great conversation at dinner right now. Just like yell it out, as opposed to saying what you're not getting. You guys aren't listening to me. Everyone's standing up and running around and no one's enjoying my dinner. All you're doing is repeating what you're not getting. It's very frustrating.
Right.
So yelling out with total anger and passion and frustration what you want, right? I would love for us to be able to be in this car and listen to music and sing together. That's what I want.
I love it.
Okay. So here we go. We go back. So you want your consequences to be predetermined and pre-communicated. So this is super important. Okay, therefore, you're going to have a discussion with your partner, your husband, a teacher, your BCBA, whoever's going to help you, to say, what would be a good consequence? Because I'm thinking ahead now. My kids never turn off the TV when I ask them to. What's a consequence for that? And get someone to brainstorm with you. Now, what we do, number two, second thing, is we make sure as much as we can that a consequence is as natural as possible to whatever the misdemeanor is, to whatever the, you know, the naughty behavior is. So for example, if you're not able to show me that you can use the TV in a way that I ask you to, whether it's, "Hey guys, could you just turn it down please? Cause I'm on the phone." And if you guys don't know where the volume is and how to do that, then I'm going to have to take control of the TV, which means I'm going to put it the volume that I want. I'm going to maybe turn it off if I need to. If you want to use the television, then you got to show me that you can use it a certain way. Therefore, if you don't use it right, then what you lose is TV privileges. You don't lose dessert. You don't lose new pair of running shoes, because that doesn't really relate. So this idea of natural consequences that relates is really, really important. You're sitting at the table, you're mucking about. That's showing me that you don't really yet understand how to be at the table. Therefore, the privilege of dessert, which is staying at the table longer and having a suite, makes sense to remove. But most of us will be in the shopping mall, shopping, and our kids are acting up and we'll threaten them to not get dessert. And it's like, well, how does that relate? Dessert's in 3 hours from now. It's a dinner time thing. Doesn't relate to shopping. Doesn't help me learn how to shop better and stay by the shopping cart. And it's a miss. It's a miss. So natural consequences as much as possible are instructive for your kids. It makes sense, right? Have you ever had a child that said, "Mom, that doesn't even make sense.
Tasha's mind is blown.
What do you do that? That doesn't even make sense.
This makes
your kids say, "Mom, Mom, listen, I'm trying to help you out. That doesn't even make sense that I don't get dessert because I'm, you know, not putting on my running shoes right." And they're trying to tell you this.
Tosh, her mind's blown. She's
My kids, I wish everybody could see so much right smarter now than me. I don't know what is even happening. I'm like dying over here. I am.
Well, that's funny.
Okay.
So if you can, you can't okay always do it, but if you can, and this is, just takes time, you know, you can do this over a martini or a glass of Chardonnay, and you sit down and you say, okay, here's the three things that kind of piss me off about my kids, or that really they're the
speak in my language,
the hot button that happens every day, several times a day, these three things. Let me just write them down with a glass of Chardonnay. And I'm going to think of what's a natural consequence that goes with that.
Yes.
And if you can't come up with it, mm-hmm, you're allowed to call a friend or ask the audience to vote, whatever you need to do. And you kind of get some opinion in there and you figure it out. Okay. So mm-hmm we have, mm-hmm, try not to do ad hoc or in the moment flare up consequences. Try and have them predetermined and try and have them be as natural that makes sense as possible. You guys with me? First two things?
Yes. Okay. So good. Yeah.
Great. So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to communicate the consequence to the child in advance. This is, Shannon, you're asking about this. Like, I've had some conversations with my daughter, but how do I do this? So a couple of really easy ideas here. First of all, depending on the age of your child and the stage of development and the communication ability, you'll be able to talk more or less about a range of consequences. So goes without saying that if I'm talking to a younger child, 3 years old, 4 and 5, which by the way, we do this with 3 and 4 and 5 year old children. They have some verbal ability. And we will just do one consequence at a time. We won't read mm-hmm them the right after. We won't say, okay, I just listened to a webinar with mm-hmm Jonathan Alderson and I've got 10 consequences. Here we go. This is the constitution of our house, right? Don't do that with a 3 year old. But if you're talking to a higher functioning 12-year-old or 11-year-old who has capacity, I might lay out three consequences, three different situations of consequences at one time. We use visuals, as you do, right? So I can use a visual and say, here's a picture of the television. Here's a picture of the television turned off. And here's a picture of reading a book. And here's a picture of not reading a book. And the lights out kind of thing. And here's sort of the pattern. Here's how it works. So we might use visuals to show, mm-hmm, right? I might, mm-hmm, in some cases, I might do a walk through, literally a physical rehearsal. When I'm calm and I'm like, the situation hasn't happened because we're communicating, say, hey, sweetheart, I want to show you the different choices and what happened. So let's sit here and we have the TV on. Let's sit together. Okay. All right. And if I have a partner, dad can come in. He could say, okay, guys, time for bed. And I'm sitting with my daughter on the couch. And I'll say, watch what happens. If we turn this off and let's go, and it could be 2 in the afternoon on Saturday. Let's go. Let's pretend we're going to go to bed. And look, get a story. Okay. That's one choice. Let's go back down. Let's sit here. And this time, let's not listen to daddy. Okay. So we'll watch TV and he comes in and says, it's bedtime and let's just stay here. Let's see what happens. Let's stay here and watch TV for another 5 minutes. Okay. Let's see. Hey, okay. Now we're going to turn it off. Let's go up to bed. Oh, the books are put away. There is no story tonight. Now there's no books. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm I might do a walkthrough in that case. Mm-hmm. I could articulate them on a piece of paper and so on and so forth. So that's a way I'm going to present it. Okay. So one at a time, or maybe max three, I'm going to write it down. So it's somewhere I can do a walkthrough. I can use pictures, but here's, Shannon, really something that you were asking about, you know, how do I really communicate that? How do I ensure it? It goes without saying, like with many, many things we do with our autistic children is we repeat that consequence for a number of weeks or a number of days until they understand it, and not in a finger shaking mm-hmm way. In a way, mm-hmm, check this out, in a way that gives them options. So mm-hmm it's day two. I communicated to her yesterday. It's day two. Now we're going to try it out. And it's TV time. And I told her about the TV consequence and the bedtime story yesterday. So now she's going to sit down and watch TV. I say, hey, you know, you've done your chores, you've done your homework or whatever, you were playing outside, now you're going to watch TV. So let's just remember what your choices are. hear the language, what your choices are. Let's remember what your choices are. So you get to watch TV now, which is so exciting. We're happy to let you watch TV. That's, you know, our gift to you in some way, because we're benevolent parents are going to give you that privilege. And when we ask you to turn it off, because that's going to happen, it's definitely 100% going to happen. We're going to ask you to turn it off to get ready for bed. You can choose to listen to us and turn it off, and then we get a bedtime story. Or if you don't listen and you decide to not turn it off, then there won't be a bedtime story. But you can choose, and we'll see how it goes. And you walk out of the room. So you're repeating that on day two at the moment of watching TV when you first start watching TV. So in other words, you don't wait again until you're frustrated and angry and you're losing it. You say, hey, remember, and you're starting to use it as a threat rather than a reminder of a choice. Let me say it again. If you use consequences as threats coming from the adult, that disempowers a child, that says, I'm in control, I'm going to threaten you with consequences, as opposed to empowering, hey, you get this privilege and you have choices to continue to have the privilege and use it the next day and the next and the next day if you follow certain user sort of requirements. That's it. And I'm such a great friend to you, I'm going to even remind you of your choices. And I'll give you a 5-minute warning before it turns off. I'm going to do everything I can to set you up for success. But ultimately, there's going to be a consequence if you decide one way rather than the other. Mm-hmm. You guys with me so far?
So I think out of what you've said is I'm taking notes for myself that we've talked about intention, like every episode. I need to be very intentional in making sure that these are things that I have planned for, right? So that I'm not thrust into this situation where that I'm frustrated and now I'm just threatening instead of giving consequences. But you're also making me see that there are some things that will trigger behavior for Gracie that are hard to, without really paying attention, it's hard to, like, she will sometimes get very frustrated very quickly. And so I think it's really showing me that I need to sit back and really kind of figure out what the trigger is before that happens. So I know when I can have these conversations.
What's an example?
Because we all know.
Like, what would be an example of that situation?
Let's say she wants an Oreo and she's had 10 Oreos today. And I'm like, ma'am, you're not having any more Oreos today. Yeah. And she will then flip and she sometimes will get aggressive. She doesn't like hit. Every once in a while, she'll try to pull hair, just something like that, but it will be instant. Right.
Okay. So let's pause. Let's pause in that. Okay. Shannon, can we talk about this a little bit? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Unpack your situation. Terrific. You guys are wonderful. This is what I love about Moms Talk Autism is you're just out there. You're like, yeah, let's dive in. This is my life. I'm living this life.
Please help.
That's right. Open book. But it's so helpful, right? It's so helpful for other parents to hear that. And that's what's, I think, amazing about what you guys are doing. So here you are. Now, there's two things that stand out to me about the situation you just described, Shannon. One is I would suggest to you, unless you tell me otherwise, that was pretty ad hoc from your ad hoc for everyone listening, just in case you haven't heard that little Latin word before. It means made up on the spot suddenly. Mm-hmm. Okay. It means out of the blue. So unless you had a rule in your house that you can have 10 Oreos, but no more, then it's somewhat of a, in her mind, right? A made up, somewhat random, because maybe yesterday she had 12 and the day before she only got 8. But how many can I have? And is that consistent? Did I know about it up front? Or did mom just say, hey, you know what, sweetheart, I think you've had too many. Now, we've all been kids and we know that loving Oreos and chocolate ice cream and Kit Kat bars and other stuff doesn't stop at kids. We like to eat what we like to eat, meaning like who likes to have someone come along and say, hey, Jonathan, I think you've had a little bit too much ice cream. And I'd be like, hey, I don't think I have yet. right?
Don't judge
me. Don't judge me. You're not the boss of me. Right? But so it does feel, as kids and adults, I'm going to say somewhat random, like, who are you? How do you know? I think you've had enough. Really? How do you think you've had enough? Based on what criteria? Because my taste buds are telling me I need some more. So in that sense, then I feel, you know, either controlled, or I feel like, it's not fair, or it's random, or whatever. Let me ask you, Shannon, would you agree that she didn't know that she should stop at 10, or that you decided it was 10, or was that predetermined?
Yeah, no, we don't have a set number. I'm like thinking, I need an Oreo container. And when these Oreos are gone, you get no more Oreos.
Bingo.
Right?
Yeah.
This is all
if
you get.
If a child can't self-regulate, can't make those decisions. And by the way, that could be physiological. It's not judging the child. They might not have a full reflex to know, like, it's called satiation, right? Some kids, their satiation isn't triggered. And so they just keep eating and eating and eating and eating. So in fairness to a child like that, I might portion control and say, here's your three Oreos. By the way, great idea, everyone, if you're listening to this, if you have a child that's always asking for snacks, ask for snacks right up to dinner, doesn't know how to self-regulate, doesn't feel satiated, what we do is we create a child's snack drawer at their level that they can access, or a cupboard that's theirs. And we say, this is where your snacks are for the day. And we exactly do what Shannon said, which is, if you want them to have three Oreos, they get three Oreos. And then there's some other, you know, maybe some fruit roll-ups. And then maybe there's a bottle of water, and say, that's your snacks there. And once they run out, then I'm really feel good about and able to say, hey, let's go, you know, mommy, I'm hungry. I want a snack. Let's go see your snack drawer. Let's go. Hey, look, there's none left right now. So that means you got to wait until dinner, which is in an hour from now. But I'm hungry now, Mom. I know, sweetheart. I really, really get it. And I'm going to be here, and I love you. And you can have some water. You can always have water if you'd like. Sometimes that makes you feel full. But I know that you're going to be okay, because I do. Your child is not starving for 60 minutes. It's not going to happen. I know you're going to be okay. And you've had already, which is exciting, all of your snacks. Now, tomorrow, if you want to have snacks longer, then you can eat slower, or, you know, whatever. And they start to learn how to regulate that, potentially. Not all kids can learn that. I get that. But it's an idea. It's their own snack drawer with their own names. And if they have siblings, the siblings cannot raid the snack drawer. So you got to monitor that. That becomes a problem. But there's some ideas. All right. So Shannon, first of all, there's your daughter eating Oreos. Her taste buds are loving it. And you come in and say, hey, I think you've had enough. So that doesn't fit our criteria of consequences. Doesn't fit. It doesn't fit because it's not predetermined. It wasn't pre-communicated, and it's not a natural consequence. What is the consequence? I'm just telling you to stop eating them. So that's doesn't fit. The consequence formula we're talking about is, know it up front. There's a natural, if you keep eating more Oreos than the 10 we've allocated to you and you decide that, then that means for the next 5 days, there is zero Oreos. And then we bring them back online after 5 days, and you can show us that you can self-regulate in the numbers we tell you. But that have to be predetermined and discussed.
Yeah.
Well, and I think let's talk about parent follow-through, because let me just tell you that there has been an acrylic snack drawer in this house with pretty stickers that have Gracie's name on the snack drawer.
Ask me if I have followed through
with the snack drawer, right? So I think that that's part of it.
You've been looking at my sheets, because on number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, number 6 on my sheet of consequences that promote responsibility is, don't negotiate and don't back down. So follow through. That's what it is. That's number 6. Don't negotiate and don't back down. Oh, that's not fair. Well, okay, listen. I will keep the TV on, but you guys have to promise me to stop fighting. Okay. 30 seconds ago, you just said, that's it. No more TV. You just said that sentence. I got you on film. That's it. No more TV. Get outside and play. Kids protest. Oh, that's not fair. I don't know. But we want to watch the end of the show. Okay, guys. Well, listen. So they're negotiating with you. I'll let you watch, but you have to promise. And so if you do that enough times, what you're teaching them is, I'm not clear on my consequences. I'm willing to back down. You can talk me out of it, and don't take me that seriously. So don't be surprised when you say turn down the volume on the TV or stop fighting, that they don't listen, because it doesn't really matter if they listen, because they know you'll throw it a consequence. They know it's negotiable, and oftentimes it doesn't stick anyway. So why would I listen to you and follow the rules? Consequences don't really follow through. So you can't negotiate. You have to be a hardliner, but that's okay. Let me use an example, and I want to go back because there's a parenting principle that, in fairness to everyone listening that are thinking, I can't do this, I don't know, is this possible? There's a parenting principle that I teach with the parents that I'm going to share this with you. This is like a consultation for a moment, okay? For those of you who want to learn this, it's a parenting principle that we teach in a program I call Extreme Clarity Parenting. I say a program. I teach it sometimes. I haven't taught it for many years. Clarity Parenting. And there's a principle that kind of underlies, if you put this principle in place, then it makes consequences so much easier. And it goes like this. You have to be clear on this question. What do I owe my children? Mm. And then everything else is a privilege. And I got to communicate that to my kids. What do I owe my kid? What do I believe I owe my kids? This is getting kind of deep for all the listeners listening, but here's a question, a bit existential. What do I owe my kids? And what's like the cream on top? What don't I owe my kids, but I love to give them? So I, here's an example for me. I owe my kids food. Of course, I think if you give birth to a child, you bring a child into the world, you should feed them. That's a right that they have. You should owe your kids. Now, does feeding your kids include Oreo cookies? Is that part of what you owe your kids or desserts? Now, that's up to you guys to decide. You'd say, yeah, it's part of childhood. It's part of, you know, a balanced breakfast. And that's okay. You can all decide your own things.
It isn't greasy. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. But be clear. And so I would suggest that you, you know, you owe your child a nutritious meal and calories for them to live and grow and be healthy. But you don't owe them Oreo cookies. Oreo cookies is optional. Oreo cookies is a privilege, not a right. So we talk about rights and privileges. As a child in my house, you have the right to be fed. You do not have a right to eat Oreo cookies or to have all of them. That's something that I extend to you as a benevolent parent, as a nice parent, as someone that loves you and cares for you, and I want you to have treats and have such a great life. But it's not something I owe you. And I'll show you where this gets to in a second, okay? So you're going to sit down with your spouse, sit down with the people living with you. If you have grandma and grandpa that live with you, if you have a nanny that's working with you, get really, really clear with all the people that are the caregivers that extend these privileges and rights to your child, and get really clear on what do we owe our kid and what don't we. And I'll tell you where this goes. So like in society, right, in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, in almost every country in the world, we have rights and then there's privileges. It's exactly how the world works. Mm-hmm. So you have a right to go to school. That's it, written in law. States in the United States and in Canada, the provinces, we have to provide education for a child. Okay. However, driving is not a right. Driving, getting a license and driving is a privilege. You can't sue the government for not passing your driver's test and not being allowed to drive. To drive, you have to pass a test in most states, right? You got to pass a test, get your license. You usually have to pay a fee. And because it's a privilege, you got to follow some rules. And if you don't follow the rules, the government can take away that privilege to drive. Hey, we're happy for you to drive. We're happy for you to get a car. Rent a car, buy a car, drive a car, be on the roads. You got to be on this side of the yellow line. You got to stop at red lights and you can't hit people. Those are some of the rules. If you don't follow those rules, then there's consequences. And we've told you these ahead of time. It's not a surprise. When you go over the speed limit, you don't go, what? Now, sometimes you do. Some people do. But typically, you have some excuse. But the excuse usually isn't, I didn't know I wasn't allowed to speed, or I didn't know that I couldn't go above the 100 sign that said 100. I might say I didn't see it or I didn't know, but no one argues that there are rules and you got to follow them. Mm-hmm. So getting your driver's license as a privilege and following rules and knowing that if I break those rules, that there's consequences of losing the privilege that was sent to me. That is a wonderful analogy that you can bring into your home, right? So television, is it a right or a privilege? It's interesting conversation in 2024, right? So I think it's almost a right for kids in the country to have some access to the internet because they need to for school. Kids need a laptop. They got to type now. If they aren't, they're really at a disadvantage. We know that, right? In school, especially in higher years, you have to type, you have to do essays, you got to do some research. So some kids could argue it's a right, but do you have a right to do gaming for 6 hours a day and do Fortnite and all the other things? Is that a right or is that a privilege that your mom and dad are extending to you because they're paying the Sprint or the AT&T or whatever it is bill and hooking you up with that and paying for that electricity and letting you sit there while you're not doing your chores or studying? As a parent, you got to be clear about what's a privilege and a right and that consequences fall in the category of privileges, that you can lose a privilege. And we're happy to extend it. We're not mean people. I love that you can watch television. I love it because it's a nice thing to do. You can relax, you can chill out, but make no mistake, this isn't a right. Mm-hmm. So when kids say, that's no fair, you're a jerk, I hate you, I'm moving out, and they do all this kind of stuff as if you've brought the world and heaven down on them because you're telling them to go to bed. What hasn't been made clear is, dude, you don't have a right to watch my television and stay up until midnight. That's not something that just happens because you're born here. That's a privilege we're giving you. And you got to show me that you can manage that privilege or you lose the privilege. So that principle in extreme clarity parenting, once that's understood by parents, and once you start working that into your system of communication and parenting, it becomes a lot easier to do consequences because consequences fit with privileges, not rights.
And I think too, like small discussion on, I know because I've thought this to myself before, like, there are nights where you're just exhausted and you know that your life is going to be harder if you enforce the consequences, yeah. right? That you have set up. And I do think for the most part that my family, my husband and I are very good at following through with consequences. But I am not saying that to pat myself on the back. I'm saying that because I know that the consequence for me, if I do not do that, is probably going to make my life much, much harder.
Like, Jana, really once or twice, I would argue with you, once or twice, it's going to be harder for you. Once your daughter learns that when mom says the TV goes off and I lose it for 2 days, that she really means it. There's no negotiation. And she still loves me. And I get another chance. You can go back and take your driving test again if you lose it. They might say you can't drive for a year, how many points. There's different rules and regulations. But usually you get another chance. And I'm always going to give my kid another chance if one is deserved and is there 100% so they can make another choice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the very next day they get a choice. But once my daughter sees that I mean that and I'm solid, rock solid about it. And by the way, number 7 in the list of how to do consequences is to deliver consequences with unconditional love. So when they feel this isn't about you being pissed off, it's not about you being frustrated or thinking I'm a bad girl. You're just the enforcer of the consequence you told me about last week and you told me and reminded me about tonight. That's all you're doing. And when I know that, here's what happens, Jan. And I'm saying this from experience with literally a couple of thousand children. Kids start becoming responsible for making the decisions that get them more of what they want.
Which then makes your life easier.
Which makes your life easier because you're not having to actually regulate and or enforce that they're making decisions because she wants the TV the next day. And she's understood that you actually will take it away, not because you're mad and you're an evil stepwitch, but because that's what you told her is going to happen and you do it. And she gets another choice next day. She's like, okay, I get this game. I can do this. By the way, for all of you listening, Natasha, Shannon, everybody, if you're asking yourself, can my kid figure this out though? I don't know. Can they figure out consequences? Here's the evidence. Here's the evidence you can look for. Has your child figured out how to play video games? In video games, there are consequences at every step of the way. If your Mario brother jumps off of the column and doesn't get onto the next column, he falls all the way down and you lose a life. It's a consequence. Mm-hmm. We're not learning how mm-hmm. to hit the button at the right time and with the joystick in a way that it goes over and he makes it to the other side. Your child knows consequences and they know how to change their behavior so that they can avoid that consequence. Mm-hmm. If they can do that, they've understood that. If they've learned how to change their behavior in a way that gets Mario to live longer, they understand consequences. It's the same thing. It's possible for your child to not have a tantrum if they don't get the Oreos. If it's predetermined, well communicated, and you stick with it, you might have a tantrum, as Shannon said. Sometimes it's easier to avoid the tantrum. Sure. Yeah. Once. But if you're telling me she's 11 years old or 12 years old or 13 and still tantruming about that, then it's not that easy for you, is it? Because you're like, my kid's 11 and I'm still dealing with tantrums with Oreos. Mm-hmm. Right. We can end that. We can actually end it and have her make decisions about how many Oreos to eat as long as it's clear and you stick with it. And it'll get way, mm-hmm. way, way, way easier for you. Way easier and for her.
Yeah. And I just wanted to bring that up because I just know how many of our parents who listen are just exhausted, right? Like there's so many things in therapies and school and problems and I just know how tired you guys are. And it's just empowering you to just understand that if you can stick through it, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
Well, it is all the things you said, Jonathan, just having that base, having all the base figured out. And then as they're changing and they're getting older and they're, you know, figuring things out. I mean, Jack is very different now as a fourth grade, 10-year-old that he was at three and with the consequences. But again, the biggest thing too is like you just said, Shannon, you know, like when you solo parent and you're tired and that's when my screaming, threatening that I'll comes never out. Follow through with comes
and
out.
I never
like, oh my gosh, recognizing
that I never
recognize that I'm like, oh Lord. So,
I know it's, yeah, it sounds, up. Yeah, it sounds like a lot, but sorry, you're going to say setting up.
Yeah. Just setting ourselves up for a success, you know, sitting down with, I mean, if you're the only provider in your house, you're the only parent in your house, it's you figuring it out. But, you know, Tyler, my husband coming home and us saying like, okay, these are the behaviors that have been happening with both of our kids, typical and diverse and saying, this is what we know that they do. This is the patterns that we've already been in. Let's create this foundation. Whether I'm home by myself because you're at the fire department or we're both home together, we follow through with this protocol, with this consequence, with these are privileges, you know, all the things. It's so.
Well, and you're bringing something up, Natasha. And in this case, you know, he's at work and coming home. And as you know, there's many families where it's shared parenting, co-parenting in different homes, right?
Right.
Custody or whatever. And there will be some parents listening, moms and dads today listening and thinking, great, but what if I say only 10 Oreos, but at my, you know, partner's house or dad's house, it's the whole box. And, you know, how do I deal with that? It's difficult. It is. It's very difficult. By the way, it's very difficult for an autistic child who likes consistency and understanding regulations and you know, what are the rules here that I can play by to have success? And if those rules are changing, it's real hard. It really is hard. Here's just a little tip I'll add. And this is just right out of from behavioral science. And that is if you, in that situation of a shared custody, or even Natasha, in your case, where let's say dad is, you know, at the fire station, maybe overnight, maybe for a couple nights, whatever, and then comes home. and you've been trying to regulate a certain, you know, pattern of behavior, and he might not know all the rules and comes home and says, hey guys, let's have some Oreos, you know, and let's have popcorn, whatever it is. And you're like, no, I just said it the other way. So here's the good news. Behavioral science tells us is that we're largely able to determine different situations and different rules of different people. We largely are. And I know that from watching teams of therapists, play therapists, ABA therapists, where a child will behave a certain way with one and not the other. And you'll hear the parents say, I don't understand. Billy will sit down and do his piano lessons or his math with Natasha. But then Shannon shows up and he's just jumping on the couch and he won't sit down. I don't get it. And when we watch what's happening, we see that Natasha is really, really clear about boundaries, doesn't back down about consequences, and he's learned that that's how you function with that person. And when Shannon shows up, not clear, backs down, negotiates, and so he takes advantage of that. So it is possible for most, I'm generalizing, but for most children that we work with, that they can understand with one parent, it's one way, and the other, it might be a bit different. It's not easy for them. It's not easy for you. But the good news is you can make it so that when you're on the clock, when it's your time, when you're parenting, that they'll listen more and follow through and make good choices. Consequences that empower children to make good choices. That's what we're talking.
Mm-hmm. Just made me think of church because I work with our special needs kiddos at in our kids ministry, and we have very clear, you know, boundaries, expectations, consequences. It doesn't matter what mom and dad are doing at home, and so they know, and it's reiterated every time they come in. It's, you know, this is you know, with some leeway because every child in there is different, has different needs, but. Yeah. Wow. I should implement that at home.
Implement this at home. Okay. Are you guys ready for the three things that will mess the system up? The three things to not do. Okay. So we talked about how to set it up. Here's three quick things that will sort of wreck the system or not work or not to do. Okay. One of them we talked about already, which is once you've decided what is a right and a privilege. So now we're talking about privileges, right? Because that's where the consequences fall. You don't impose consequences on rights. So privileges. Mm-hmm. And I'm extending the privilege of watching TV. I'm extending the privilege of you staying out playing with your friends. I'm extending the privilege of you playing with this toy. I'm extending the privilege of you having an extra snack or a dessert. And it can go on and on. And once I've made it clear that along with that privilege comes some responsibilities of how you use it, how you turn it on, turn it off, put it away, take care of it, make it clean, whatever those responsibilities are. We've talked about that. I've modeled it. Maybe a walkthrough. Maybe I showed them how I want them to put the toy away, how I want them to clean the sink after they play, you know, in it and make an arts and crafts or do something with it. So you can do that. I'm happy for you to do that, but you got to clean it up after. So I've modeled it. And I've talked really clearly about what the consequences will be. And I've used the language about choices. You can choose it this way or this way. And if you choose not to put away the milk once you have a snack, then you're choosing to no longer have snacks for the next 3 days over the weekend. That'll be your choice. So I'm doing it in an empowering way. So if I've set all that up, here's three things that you don't want to do that'll wreck it. One we talked about already, which is you can't negotiate or back down. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just don't do that for yourself. Stick with it. Even when the tantrum happens, even if they say you're the, you know, I wish I had another mom, all the things that kids say to us when they're not getting what they want. So you can't negotiate or back down. You got to stick through that. Number two is you got to deliver and enforce the consequence. So you come in and you actually turn off the television and then you take the TV remote and put it in your pocket. Don't turn off the TV and put it down on the table, but you know what happens. Mm-hmm. The child grabs it, they turn the TV back on again. And now you're having a physical fight. So put it in your pocket and hold on to it. So, but deliver and enforce the consequence with unconditional love. And what we mean by that is consequences should never be done with humiliation or physical punishment, or a way that makes a child feel bad about the choice they made. I'm going to say that again. This is very different from how we usually do consequences. Consequences are often saying, okay, that's it. Clearly, you can't listen to me. Clearly, you don't know how to put stuff away. So blah, 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 X, Y, Z. And it leaves a child feeling not just, oh, I get the consequence, but I'm also a schmuck. I'm also not a good person. And that's not the point of a consequence. If you do that, you're disempowering the child because you're sort of suggesting you can't make a right choice. I want to do it this way. Hey, you chose to not put your shoes away and just run in the house and go watch TV because I know how much you want to watch the TV. It's after school. And so you didn't pay attention to putting your shoes away. That's a choice. That's okay. But it means that the TV's turned off and tomorrow, so that we give you more time to put your shoes away and remember it, there won't be TV after school, even if you put your shoes away, which we still expect you to do. If you put your shoes away for the next 3 days when you come home from school and show us that you really understand that and you learn it and you got it and you do it, then you can earn watching TV again after you put your shoes away starting on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I could say all of that in a loving way, in a patient way, in some ways, in an empowering way to say, you can do this, man. I'm going to be here. I'm going to prompt you. I'm going to remind you. I'm going to help you learn to put your shoes away. And when you do that, it's going to be so cool because you'll earn TV again. So that's number two, is the consequences. Don't back down. Number one, don't negotiate. Number two, number three, deliver them with love and acceptance. Does that make sense? And here's number three. Number three is this one is harder and it's done all the time. So try not to do this, guys. Don't compensate the consequence you've imposed with a post-consequence treat.
Oh,
or
geez.
Cuddle or a hug, right? Which comes from guilt, doesn't it? So
yeah.
Let's say you really, really do it well. You really turn the TV off. It's been an hour. The kids are sort of looking out the window like the universe has come crashing down because they're not able to watch Paw Patrol. And you're feeling just so guilty, even though you're sort of half proud that you followed Jonathan Alderson's consequences at Empower Protocol. And you're like, I did it. I turned off the TV. They're sitting there. I worked through the tantrum. This is terrific. But I feel so darn guilty. So I go up to them. I'm like, hey, you guys have been really, really good. And so even though I said you can't have TV until Saturday, I'm going to let you watch it. Or, hey, guys, you know what? There's no TV until Saturday, but you know, I know this has been a really rough afternoon. So guess what? We're going for ice cream or something like this. And this happens all the time. It happens all the time. We're trying to make up now for the punishment that we did, the consequence, which, by the way, your kids chose. Remember, they chose to drive fast and get the speeding ticket and lose points and lose their license. But it would be like the government saying, hey, I know that you were speeding and you chose that. And I know that we caught you and we gave you, you know, your points. But what we'd like to do is we'd like to give you a free trip to Disneyland because we feel guilty. Like, what would happen then, guys? You know what would happen? People would start speeding and getting tickets and saying, yeah. I like to get in trouble because I could potentially get a free trip out of this. And I'm telling you, it's exactly what kids learn is misbehaving. And by the way, suffering the consequences often leads to treats and extra hugs and mom apologizing for being a mom and doing what she should be doing as a mom. So if you do this, and we're giggling, it's true. And it is kind of funny, but we do it all the time as we try and make up for punishments and consequences out of our guilt. Sometimes we say, hey, come here, sweetheart, give me a hug. You know that mommy loves you, right? We're trying to reestablish all of this. Mm-hmm. And she's like, cool. I get one-on-one cuddle time with mom if I don't listen. So you can't do that. You have to let, and this is the sentence that we use a lot. You have to let the consequence stand and work on its own. Mm-hmm. So when you swoop in, whether it's an hour later, a day later, and you do all this other stuff, what you're doing is you're sucking the air out of the consequence that you'd set up. In other words, you're disempowering the use, right, of the consequence. What the consequence is doing. The penalty of driving fast and the fine is a disincentive to speed. But if you get a rebate on it the next day, then it doesn't work anymore. So those are the three things. You can't negotiate. Mm-hmm. later. You can't negotiate in the middle of it. Oh, okay, mom, but how about only I get three, or you can't negotiate on the consequence you set up. Number two, when you deliver it and follow through, do it with unconditional love. And number three, don't come back and do like make up sweets and treats and hugs and guilt and that kind of stuff. You can't do that. Otherwise, it totally pulls away the consequence. So now you have it. And how to do a consequence, what not to do, and the whole parenting principle about rights and privileges and teaching your kids that television is a privilege, not a right. Eating good food is a right, but desserts are a privilege. And once we start really communicating that, and it takes a whole bunch of months to figure this out and talk about it and get it right, it's a totally, totally, totally different situation for you.
I'm so jealous to anybody who is like newly in parenting and early in the, the diagnosis, because I wish I would have had you, Jonathan, you know, at least even just 5 years ago.
It's possible to recover. You're a recovering consequence person.
So I will be recovering for sure.
We're in recovery.
Consequence recovery. It is possible, but do it one at a time, right? For any parents, by the way, who are excited about these ideas, and I hope you are, about the possibility, right? It's empowering your kids to learn to make choices. So if you're excited about this, don't do what you might do, which is to sit, race home and say, okay, guys, guess what? And like lay out, like I said, the new constitution. Just take one idea and implement it. Maybe talk about rights and privileges. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, but get clear first, have those discussions, plan it. Natasha, you can absolutely turn the boat around in the consequence direction in a way that empowers your kids to make right decisions, right? You can.
And better to do it now, right? Like better to figure 100%. It out now. There's no time like the present.
And there doesn't have to be a disconnect between, oh, we do it this way with Sloan because she's typical, and we do it this way with Jack because he's neurodivergent.
Let's talk about that. Can we talk just for a minute about this? Really important, mm-hmm. Natasha. Great question. But what about the delta, the difference between my child with differences, different needs, special needs, autism, and my neurotypical child? By the way, I appreciate that many of you don't use those words, that language with your kids. They're both unique. They're both wonderful. They both have, you know, needs. But I think, Natasha, part of that conversation, and by the way, I was just in London, England. This last week, I flew over there to work with a family, 5-year-old daughter. They had me fly over, and I was in their house. And I mean, I was standing in their house for 3 days. I was there at breakfast, lunch, dinner. I got in the car. I went to school with them. I watched the school. I inputted on the parents. I came back. I watched dinner. So they had me right there. Can you imagine that? And taking notes and giving them feedback during all of their family life. And they have a neurotypical daughter also, so two little girls. And we had this question about, well, it's not fair. Comes back to fairness, right? This idea of what's fair in life. Mm-hmm. Is it fair? Is that fair? Is it fair that if you walk outside in your socks and you step in water, that your socks absorb the water and your feet are wet? Is that fair? That's no fair. It's not that it's fair or not. That's how that works. That's a physical property of water and socks. They absorb water. And it's kind of what I want to ultimately explain even to a younger sibling, Natasha, is that fairness is this construct that Socrates made up, or maybe philosophers even before, this idea of justice and fairness. And of course, again, we want to level the playing field for as many people as possible and be inclusive and make life really sweet for us all. That's our vision, right? But this idea of fairness is interesting because ultimately, is it really fair that one child is born autistic and one isn't? Is it fair that one child is born into a place of poverty in the world and one is born into extreme luxury and, you know, resources? Is it fair that one school district has more teachers and one school district doesn't? Is it fair that someone is swimming and they drown and someone beside them doesn't, is it, you know, and you can go on and on and on and on. So how does this relate? It relates to saying, this is the sister or brother you have, and there are differences, and we make accommodations and modifications, and sometimes things won't be equal on the scale of fairness, right? But there's reasons for that. There's reasons we give your brother longer to choose what song he wants on the radio than you. And so you're impatient. You're there and, oh, but we got to school and we only got to listen to one song because he took so long to choose it. Right. But that's not fair or not fair. It's just that he took longer to choose. And so we get to enjoy that one song. And during that time of choice, you could do a thousand things, like look out the window and count how many trucks go by, or you could sing to yourself in your head, or you could, you know, count numbers on your fingers and practice your 2x table. What I'm trying to teach is resilience. And if I'm trying to always level the playing field between a neurotypical sibling and autistic sibling, I think you're, again, creating a false narrative that doesn't really exist because it's not fair. But let's take the word fairness out of it and just say, you're right, it's not the same. You're not the same as your brother. Mm-hmm. Your brother's not the same as you. And the way that he puts on his clothes and gets dressed and eats his food and lots of things isn't the same. That's called difference. That's neurodivergence. And we're going to really embrace and enjoy and lean into difference. And let's stop talking about fairness. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I love it on going in the reverse, right? You know, Jack says this about Sloan, you know, when he's struggling, when we're doing schoolwork or something and he is having a hard time and Sloan is just like, bang, 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 you know, and we have the same conversation, you know, you guys are just different. And, you know, yes, I love that. I love it.
Okay. So I have a question for a portion of our audience who does deal with children who are aggressive. And so we've talked about behaviors that have to do with television or dessert or 10 Oreos, which I would like to at least make one disclaimer that generally Gracie does not get 10 Oreos in a day.
Gracie.
I just feel like I have to put it out there.
Sweet Grace.
sweet dear Grace. That's She's right. like her mama.
If any of you are thinking that Shannon feeds her daughter Oreos for breakfast, she doesn't. She doesn't.
I mean, she may have had an Oreo on the way to school, but she had breakfast first. Okay.
Breakfast first. That's right.
Awesome. I mean, carbs are carbs. Carbs are carbs. Does it matter? No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Anyways, but disclaimer
that's,
done.
That's right. That's right.
How do the parents that have kiddos who are aggressive, what are some good ways to maintain consequences with actions like that? Because I do know that, you know, some of our audience, their children are small. So when they're aggressive, they can be managed a little bit easier. Kiddos are big. And sometimes there are situations where you have to remove yourself from the situation, right? Like staying in the situation is not necessarily safe for one party or the other. So how would you, and I know all the kids are different, so it's really hard, but what is maybe a broad way that we could discuss what to do in a situation where it's aggressive?
Yeah, really good. So let's talk just for a second about mitigation to not get there.
Yes.
And your question is really important to address. Okay, but what when it's happening, what do I do? But we all also want to know, well, how can we not get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of things that are obvious that you know, but I just want to underline them. And so I'm going to share three things right now. And if anyone listening thinks they could do more of any one of these, then you're already closer to reducing the possibility of aggression. Okay, so that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So the first one, going back to consequences just for a second, is if you get the idea that the way we just talked about consequences is about your child making a choice, ultimately, that's what it is. That's what I presented to you. You can choose to listen and turn off the TV when I ask you, or you can choose to not, and then a consequence happens. So you're choosing the consequence, right? We just went through that. If you understand that, then all of a sudden, what's wonderful about the system is you now have a super ultra clear target behavior using ABA terminology that you can reinforce positively, which is when they listen and turn off the TV, you're going to not only do they get the bedtime story or whatever it is, or they get to watch TV next day, right? Like it might be as simple as the consequence of you not turning off the TV when I ask you is not watching TV tomorrow. Might be just as simple as that. Again, if you can drive on the road properly, you get to keep driving. If you don't, then you don't get to drive. It doesn't always, the consequence doesn't have to be something different than or outside of what the actual activity is. So let's say your child, you say, hey, little buddy, time to turn off the TV in 2 minutes. I'll give you another 1 minute warning. Hey, buddy, in 1 minute. Hey, buddy, it's time to turn it off. And he turns it off. You're going to not just walk away and go back to doing what you're doing or say, okay, let's get on our shoes, go outside. You're going to pause, bend down, look at him or in whatever way communication works and say, I am so happy and proud of you that you listened to the language, that you chose to listen to me and turn off the TV. That was a great choice you made.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I want to really reinforce my autistic child or any of my kids making good choices. That was a good choice. You know what? You just chose to turn off the TV and listen to me. And that means you get to watch TV tomorrow again too. So that's the first thing, is really reinforcing what you do want. Super obvious. Close to 100% of parents who are in the field of autism understand positive reinforcement. But when I go to homes, and I do a lot, I just told you, I did it for 3 days straight in London, England, just this last weekend, I see a really, really, really low rate of positive reinforcement for behaviors that parents want. I see very low, very low, very, very low. So if you do one thing after this podcast, which is to be clear about what two or three target behaviors you want to target around listening and compliance and doing what you're told and that kind of stuff, and just start reinforcing it. Thanks for listening. Hey, that was great. Grace, you came to the table when I asked you to. That's super duper. You're so good at that. And we do that for 3 or 4 weeks or continually, then compliance and those issues of struggle are going to decrease. That's number one. Number two is aggression, and I'm going to talk about aggression and how to avoid it. Aggression is almost always an escalation from a tantrum or from whining and protest. Aggression rarely, usually doesn't go from a child being happy to hitting. It usually goes happy to unhappy to whining, maybe some crying tension, and then aggression. And I'm saying that because in most cases that we've worked with aggression, we actually start, our starting point is at an easy point, Shannon. And that is, we teach the parents to stop responding so much to whining. Now, that sometimes means more escalation for a little while. Because if I'm not responding, the reason why I'm responding to whining is because I don't want it to escalate. But
because they're going to get louder.
It's going to get louder. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that that's only true in maybe 50%, which is still a lot of cases. But in 50% of cases, if you don't give in or if you don't respond, and this is the key, if you don't engage and respond to whining, you'll start to teach your child in 50% of the cases that whining doesn't work. So don't go there and just get over it. Mm-hmm. And why is this important? Because you're starting to change the relationship of communication between you and your child. Fundamentally, which is you're 12 or you're 7 or you're 5, and I no longer am going to respond to your whining and crying as if you were an infant. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take language and communication, whether that's with an assistive communication device or sign language or however you communicate, but whining and crying and then ultimately tantruming and hitting is not going to be a communication that we're going to have. You can feel unhappy. You can cry and be mad, but not at me to motivate me to give you Oreos.
Mm-hmm.
This is fundamental what we're talking about here, right? This is really, really fundamental. Mm-hmm. As a parent, you have to decide that my child is no longer an infant and you have to decide I'm not going to respond. Does that make sense? So what happened? Mm-hmm. So they go, aw. If they're at that level of talking where you say there's, you know, we're not going to do that. That's the first whine, the little whining. And if you're a parent that engages with that, you talk to that, you say, I know, sweetheart, you're disappointed, and you talk to it, then you're responding to the whining. What we do is we just ignore that. Hey guys, time to put toys away. Silence. I don't respond to that. I just let it go. I've told them what I want. Guys, time to put your toys away. I don't respond to the whining. So you'd say, well, Jonathan, but then what if they don't put the toys away. I'm going to come back in a minute and there'll be a really clear consequence that we've discussed ahead of time. Hey guys, I'll give you one more reminder. It's time to tidy up the toys. And if not, if you choose not to listen this time, then you know you're choosing to, whatever it is. I don't have to respond to the whining. So if be really conscious after this podcast, as you listen to this, how much am I responding to, talking to, reacting to, dealing with whining on that level? Because that actually ultimately escalates to the hitting and the aggression. And if you can, in some ways, kind of nip it in the bud or change the relationship between unhappiness and what your kid's using it to get what they want at that fundamental level, some of the aggression is going to already be reduced. So now we have two strategies, which are happy strategies, feel good strategies for us as parents to do. One is notice when your kid is listening and paying attention, doing, making right choices or whatever it is, and reinforce it. And number two is try to reduce your reactions to the whining at the very low level. Okay, this doesn't pull energy out of you. If you're a tired mom, if you're overwhelmed, this is not an extra burden. You're actually focusing on good stuff. So that's good. Okay, and here's number three. Number three is if your child is at the age and stage that you can, it's really, really important that you have an extremely clear conversation that there is absolutely no hitting allowed in this house. As obvious as it sounds, guys, I would say easily 60, 70% of the parents I work with haven't had that conversation. They've said no hitting in the middle of it. Hey, no hitting. Don't hit your brother. Don't hit me. Hey, what are you doing? But there hasn't been a heart-to-heart conversation when a child's frontal lobes are receptive to hearing it. There hasn't been that. So when your child is in the middle of hitting you, when your child is escalated into that frustration level, that anger level, we know biologically that the frontal lobes where they listen and the logic and all of that is not shut down completely, but it's not functioning as well as it could because they're in the adrenaline, I want to hit you and get what I want stage, right? So that moment isn't the time. You might, parents will say, but I've told them 100 times. Yeah, but you told them always during the hitting. Okay. So find a time when you're cozy on the couch, you're snuggled, right? Or you're walking in the park or they're having fun in the pool and you're passing the football back and forth or you're bouncing, you know, in the water together. And it's like a jolly time. It's a nice time. It's a comfortable time. It's a sweet time. They're receptive. And you say, hey, sweetheart, you know what? I wanted to talk about hitting. Sometimes you get mad and you try and hit me. And I want to be really, really clear. In our house, we don't hit. We don't hit each other. We don't do that. We never hit each other. It's not something you can do. You can't hit your brother and you can't hit your mom. And I want to be really clear about it. I love you very much. And I know you get mad sometimes. So we're going to talk about a couple of other things you can do instead. You could stomp your foot. Let's stomp our feet together. Right? When we're really mad, let's stomp our foot on the floor and you can march and march and you can say, I'm mad or that's not fair or whatever, but you can't hit. You just can't do that. It's not acceptable. And here's the consequence if it happens. So that would be the third thing I would say in terms of what to do before it happens is have a heart to heart and have it a couple of times and be super ultra, ultra clear about it. Okay. So let's skip just really quickly to when it's happening, what do I do? So I said, no, you can't do that or get down from that or put that down or don't talk like that or do your homework or go to bed or whatever. And it escalates. And then we start getting some pushing or an attempt to hit or slap or throwing things. And I think the number one thing for you to do is to take care of yourself as a mom or a dad. Number one is take care of yourself. And there's all sorts of different situations. Shannon, you said, listen, it's hard to generalize because every kid's different. Every situation's different. Yeah. If it's possible for you to remove yourself to some degree, that's usually the best option because the more that you stand there and either take it on the chin or try and get in the way or block your child, you're 100% going to get into a physical tussle, trying to hold your kid, pushing them back, and you'll get into a physical manipulation situation. And that's the last thing you want to get into. You have to sometimes for self-defense. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you have to grab your child's arm. Sometimes you have to block them. But if you can help yourself and move out of the way and avoid getting into a physical tussle, what happens often is if you move far enough away, 5 feet away, 6 feet away, they come after you a little bit, you move another foot or two away, that they'll see, oh, I'm not going to get much traction here. No one's pushing back. Mm-hmm. They're not biting. Mm-hmm. They're not taking the bait. She's not fighting back. She's not yelling. She's not, you know, telling me to stop that and get back in your room and this is and give me that and you can't do. If you guys escalate with your child, now we have two burning fires, two blazing fires. There's a lot of heat. You know the term, fuel on the fire. And behavioral science tells us that when a child pushes one way, when you push the other, it's going to increase the pushing. This is human nature. It's just behavioral science 101. So stepping back and not getting into the fight and diffusing it, right? You're in an argument with your husband. If you're mature enough, you say, which isn't always easy when your brain is on fire and you're angry, you say, hey, this is really heated up right now. I'm really, really irate at you. I don't want to be, and I don't think we should talk when I'm feeling like this. I'm going for a walk. You got the kids for 20 minutes. See ya. You take a break, right? You step out, or you go in the living room. I'm going to the bedroom. Let's talk at 7, at 6:30 right now. We got to cool down. This is not good that we're doing this right now in this state. So as an adult, I can do that. When I have an autistic child who's 7 who's trying to hit me, they probably won't agree to that timeout, but I'm going to sort of do that. I'm going to step away, stop talking for a second. I'm going to be quiet and that kind of stuff. Here's some people say, but isn't that giving in? Isn't that teaching that crying and whining works? No, because I still haven't turned the TV back on. I haven't gone and gotten the Oreo cookies. I haven't gone and given them the thing they want. I'm just removing my physical body and my argument and my intensity out of this so that it doesn't escalate further. Okay. But ultimately, Shannon, you can't negotiate. You can't come back and give them that thing that they're wanting in that moment. You can't, even if it gets really, really intense. So there's a lot more there. That's another whole episode, right? Unpacking aggressive behavior, anger, unhappiness. I would strongly argue in many cases that unhappiness, whining, crying, some aggression has been reinforced in some way, shape, or form. It's not blaming parents. It's just saying, like you said, we give in.
Yeah.
We do it to appease, to not go there because we don't want to it to escalate. But then you get caught in a cycle.
Yeah,
exactly. I think it's interesting too how you talk about removing yourself from the situation, if possible, and not placing the child in another situation.
Yeah.
Like you're controlling your body. And because that, I think, is a struggle for me sometimes. It's like wanting to provide autonomy to my child, and her body is hers. And so I like that by removing yourself, like she is still her human, there is a consequence of me removing myself because of her actions. And it doesn't have to cross over, you know, in the situation that we just talked about, which I like.
I really like that too. And again, you said, if it's possible, there'll be some listeners saying, yeah, but I can't just leave my 5-year-old who's in a tantrum in the living room by himself, because he's going to then take the flower vase and throw that and put his fist through the TV. So I get it. You might have to monitor, and sometimes you can't leave. I get it. Totally get it. This is just if you can. And sometimes it's standing back 3 or 4 feet, not leaving the room, right? It's just, again, not pushing back against. But here's just a really interesting little thing, Shannon, to add to your repertoire as you're thinking about your daughter and Natasha for your sons. There's this word that's thrown around a lot in our field of self-regulation, right? Regulation, self-regulation. Because we're talking about tantrums and whining and what we say, we've got to teach your kids to regulate, to self-regulate. And so anyway, that's a whole conversation we could get into, but I want to share just two strategies that we use in our program that works really well. And the first, when we talk about self-regulation, The first is you want to, when a child is worked up, when they're in a frenzy, a meltdown, a tantrum, whatever you want, and even if it's legit, I'm not delegitimizing saying they aren't truly frustrated or truly angry. The idea is, but how do you manage and cope with that as you get older? So the first thing I would suggest to you guys is to focus on the physical and not the cognitive or mental. Write that down. Focus on the physical first and the logic second. You just talked about this, right? So when my body is on adrenaline as a little child or as a teenager, my heart rate is going, my muscles are a bit tense, I have some hormones surging through me, adrenaline surging through me, and my capacity to understand logic and reason is quite low. Ironically, as a situation becomes intense, moms and dads and teachers and vice principals and soccer coaches tend to try reasoning. Listen, and they might even grab a child by the arms to get him to stand there and think, if I could just put some logic into you, then you would stop kicking the soccer ball in the wrong way. Listen, you can't kick the ball there because there's cars and it's really dangerous. Here's the thing. That child's brain isn't hearing your logic. It's not going to work right now. But his body is surging and you're trying to get him to stand still, which is also the opposite of what his all of his adrenaline is telling him to do. So what we do in our program is we focus first in an upset meltdown situation on calming the body, the physiology. That's the first thing. We want to bring comfort to the physical body, not giving in. We want to bring self-regulate. So we do a variety of things. And by the way, some of them are obvious and some of them aren't. Obvious things are, let's take three deep breaths. We all know that. Let's take some breaths together. I know that you want to go on the slide again and you don't want to go home. I hear you. So I'm saying, I'm having that conversation as he's, but you don't want to go home. Is it not fair? I say, I hear you, sweetheart, but let's just take some breaths and then we can talk about it. I'm going to help you. It might be soothing touch, might be a really nice shoulder rub. I hear you, sweetheart. I love you very much and I'm going to help you. Let's calm first. Let's help our body to relax first. Okay. So it might be a physical calming touch. It may be the hug. A less obvious one is it may be, let's go for a run. I'm out in the playground. My child wants to go on the slide. He's tantruming, won't come with me. I say, hey, come on, chase me. Let's run. Grab my hand. Let's run quick to the fence and back, and then we'll talk about the slide. So sometimes when that adrenaline is surging, what we need to do is do five jumping jacks or run around the thing or play chase or tag or something that's physical to just get that calm that happens after you do a physical thing. Let's jump on the trampoline 10 times and then talk about it. Now you might say, Jonathan, come on, kid's in a tantrum. He's out of control and you're going to get him to jump or do a sit up or run. That's insane. I will tell you that sometimes when kids, I remember clearly this little girl I was working with, little girl, about 7 years old, having a really, really big meltdown with me. It was a play therapy session. I was one-on-one. She was really trying to hit me. I grabbed a big physio ball that was in the room, and I put it in between this 7-year-old girl and myself. And I started to say to her, hit this ball. Go on, hit it really hard. That's it. Now hit it with your left, hit it with your right, hit it twice. Me too. And within less than a minute, I had been able to put the ball down. She was no longer trying to hit me. She's trying to hit the ball and following my instructions. Her parents who were watching were blown away saying, you went from her trying to hit you to giving her instructions and she followed it because we were channeling that adrenaline and that anger and that frustration in that moment. What happened is she was able to then calm her physiology to a point that I could appeal to her logic. So physical first, logic second. We often do it the reverse. We often try and logic, talk our way through this tantrum and the kid's brain is not listening to you isn't able to rationalize, doesn't make any sense. And we're wondering, I've told him three times he can't go outside because it's raining. And he's still trying to hit me, right? Because he's not hearing you. So focus on the physical, if you can, self-regulation. And the whole idea of self and regulating would be another chat we can get to. But hopefully that's helpful for you guys around physical first, logic second.
I have two more episodes for you already. So
that's what I said. We're just going to go on the 10 streak. We're going to say 10 for now.
Jonathan's going to have a regular spot on the Mom Talk Autism podcast here.
Janet, do you think that one or a couple of these things could help you when your daughter is starting to work up in aggression or starting to get that adrenaline surging and get that sort of mind of, I'm going to pull air, I'm going to hit. Can you imagine one of the things we've talked about helping you in that situation?
Definitely. Well, I do think I'm going to start removing myself from the situation if I need to, right? And I mean, we are lucky, and I know that a lot, not everybody has, my husband's retired law enforcement. I have cameras in my house because we have therapists. Like, I have the ability to remove myself and watch her and make sure she's safe, right? So, and not everybody has that. So I fully understand that. Another thing that we've been working on with Gracie is practicing deep breathing through our nose when we're calm.
100%.
So that when we are getting worked up, I can point to my nose and breathe in, you know, and she's realizing, let me, you know, let me take the deep breath. I love the physio ball idea, like redirecting it, you know, and, you know, I think some of the struggle has always been that she's frustrated for a reason. She's frustrated because we have a lack of ability to communicate in certain ways. Yeah. And while she's more communicative than she has been in the past, not allowing certain behaviors because they're unsafe, but also wanting her to feel like she is able to communicate the way that she's feeling, right? But we have to be able to do it in a safe way that's not going to hurt anyone. And so I think those are wonderful ideas.
The last thing you said is the line that I'm suggesting that you draw, which is, but we have to be able to communicate that we're upset without hurting someone, which is that conversation of, in our house, we don't hit. You can be angry, you can be frustrated, you can be sad, you can feel life isn't fair, you can be all of that. That's human. And you, out of all the people I know, have a right to feel that way in your condition and in the way that society, you know, treats you. But you can't hit. That's just not, like, it's not an option. You know, stamp your foot, go to your bedroom, cry in your pillow, ask me for a hug, ask me for a second chance, ask me to take your hand and come with you to the school and talk with them. Like, whatever it is, I am going to be your advocate. I'm there for you. I care about you. I will hug you. You can be mad in front of me. I won't judge you. You can't hit people. And so if I just keep coming back to that, 5 years old, 6 years old, seven, eight, they might try it again. Anger happens. We reach out. We're not thinking it happens. But if we make it clear, you can teach someone to not hit in that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I like that.
And I think that, you know, parenting is hard in general, right? Being a parent is hard in general. Nobody has an easy job when it comes to parenting. And then you just add on these extra levels, you know, of having to be aware. And there's so many things to think about. But I think the reason I love this episode so much kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, where life just isn't always fair. And we have to figure out how to teach our kids that, because all of us in this community want for our children to be as independent as they possibly can when they get older. And by not teaching them that, we are doing them a disservice, because we are making it to where they're not going to be able to be as independent as they possibly can be when they're grown. So I love all of this, Jonathan.
Me too.
You've been wonderful. And I can't wait to have you on again.
Thank you. I love chatting with you guys.
It has been so insightful, and also so, like, okay, it's time to get down to some work. I just had my parenting therapy session. Let's
down to business.
One thing at a time, like, one bite
can your, at a time. Can your listeners on this podcast see your face? Can they see the video, or are they just listening?
Not
So
not yet.
It is recorded, yes. But we don't publish video. Right. Which I mean, I have no problem publishing screenshots of Kasha's head exploding because I have them all. But we don't publish video.
The reason why you know, Shannon, why I'm saying this is because for listeners, if you're still listening to this, you have to understand that as we've gone along and as, you know, I pointed out maybe a certain technique or strategy, Natasha is totally judging herself, but in kind of a cute way, right? Just sort of roll her eyes and go, oh my God, I've been doing it that way. That's what's happening. Or I've got to change this. And it's charming and it's sweet because she admits it. But I also want to say to Natasha in a serious way, in a kind way, which is, and this is true for everyone out there listening. When you hear something that you could change or you realize there's a pattern that could be changed that you're doing, don't judge yourself. As they say on CNN, don't weaponize, right? The good stuff that you're hearing. These are tips, they're tricks, they're things that you're not supposed to have known. Your child wasn't born with an operation manual that came out as well, right? Mm-hmm. That would be cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, here's a new baby and here's the operation manual. Turn to page 2. What do I do when they're tantruming? That wasn't there. So now you'll learn some tips and you'll learn some things along the way, which you've been doing for years. But to embrace that with excitement, which of course you are, to say, oh, wow, that's cool. I'm going to try this and keep learning. So any of you here who are thinking, oh my gosh, I've been doing it wrong or whatever, if you could see Natasha's face, she rolls her eyes, but then she has this big smile and she's sort of laughing at the whole thing in some ways, right? Appreciating like, oh my gosh, more stuff to learn. And I love that. I love that attitude, that self acknowledgement and recognition, but also with some levity, some lightness, right, to it so that you can wake up the next day and keep going.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And absolutely. All four of us will tell you many times on Instagram and the podcast that we are winging it. We are not professional. We mess up all the time. And so there's, you know, zero judgment, you know, when we talk about this type of stuff.
So important. Not judging yourselves, not judging yourself, not judging your,
and learning new things and implementing and growing and moving
100%,
forward.
Doing the best you can, doing to say that I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. I'm doing the best I can.
Absolutely. And so we will wrap up right now. As for the last three episodes, guys, check the show notes and the email that we send out every single week. It has links to how you can access Jonathan. It has links to the Thrive Guide. It has a discount code that Jonathan gave us for our listeners for the Thrive Guide. So please don't forget to check that out. You can check the show notes out on any of the podcast players, and it has all of the links and everything that you guys need. Jonathan, thank you so much for being back
here
again.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you. Love chatting with you and giggling and laughing along the way. So thanks for inviting me back.
Everybody, have a wonderful week, and we'll catch you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.